Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis. I'm the host of the show. Not a very important factor in today's show because this is For the Record, the Radio Entrepreneurs legal show, and we are being hosted by the law firm of Davis Mom and Pat Clendenin. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Always a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you very much. These offices are lovely. The whole place is just wonderful. It's a big upgrade, I think.
We try to be welcoming and hospitable, especially to you, Jeffrey.
Oh, I don't know about especially to me. But our next guest, you know, for me, needs no introduction. I've known Bob forever. Bob, my wife's family's known Bob for many years. He was a legend in my home before I even knew who he was. It's Bob Cohn from the law firm of Cohn, Rasnick, Meyerson, and Plout. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. Bob, is it fair to say a contingency litigator?
I am. My practice is a bit unusual in that regard. We handle business litigation on a contingent basis. We only get paid if we win. Most business cases, when you hire an attorney, they charge hourly. And that's the norm pretty much around the country. We looked at that business model and decided that we could do better if we charged on a contingent basis, similar to the way personal injury cases are handled. It's worked out pretty well over the years for us. But I have to say that we vet our cases very carefully before we take them. It might be 2 or 3 months of investigation before we'll decide whether we want to take the case. And realistically, I think we only take about 1 out of 4 cases that come in the door.
Well, I'm sure everybody is sort of like poking around to see if they have a case, so you have to do a little bit more due diligence than the average person.
Yeah, and people who come into the office knowing that we'll take the case, that they don't have to pay us, they don't have any skin in the game, if you will. So their interest in winning isn't as strong as someone who has to pay. So we need to make darn sure that they have a real case before we take it. And of course, one of the nice aspects of this is that since we're not getting paid, we can do pretty much what we want to do in the litigation. So we might do some things that an attorney who's being paid hourly might not do because it might not be that productive in the client's eyes. There are aspects of litigation, in discovery process or motion practice, which we might do just to, even though we know we might lose the motion because it will tease out additional evidence that might be there. Someone who's being paid hourly might be reluctant to do that because the client's going to say, well, why did you bring that motion? We just lost, you know, and they paid a lot of money for that. But we can do that sort of thing because we're not getting paid. So we've got a lot more freedom to explore the case and pursue it in ways that someone who's being paid hourly might not be able to. And of course, someone who's paying hourly may have restrictions on what they can afford to do. So that can narrow what the lawyer can do, and we don't have those restrictions.
Just I'll add one more point before Pat jumps in. You must also get cases from other attorneys that don't fit, let's say, a traditional mid or large law firm model, too.
Oh, we do. When we get the case, well, here's what happens in the big firms. The guy in the corporate department decides that he's got a client who's got a case, and he goes down to the litigation department and says, what's it going to cost to go after this $300,000? And the litigator says, well, it's going to cost him about $100,000 before we get through trial. And corporate guy goes back to his client and tells him that. And then the client says, well, that's too much money. And he starts looking around for another firm. And he'll find another firm that'll take the case for less money. And then eventually that corporate lawyer may end up losing his client because of the costs of litigation in his firm. So we're a resource for firms like that because we just take the case. We don't take the client.
Right.
If the client has something, another issue or another project, we send it right back where it came from.
You're a one-off.
A one-off. So the larger firm, they're happy. They get to keep the client and keep the client happy that can't afford this piece of litigation. And we're happy to get the case. And the client's happy because he's paid nothing to pursue his claim. So we work with a number of the bigger firms around town and around the country on these issues.
So, Bob, tell us a little bit about how the four of you got together and formed your firm, and how long have you been in business?
Well, when I got out of law school, I was pretty much committed to helping people. I joined the Peace Corps. Of course, when you're a lawyer, they don't send you abroad. They sent me to New Bedford, which was an eye-opening experience and very exciting. And then I moved on to the Attorney General's office, where I did public protection work, sort of more of the same on a bigger scale. But the public protection work was all business-oriented. So I learned an awful lot about the problems facing businesses in and around Massachusetts, in the country, and the problems that consumers have dealing with them. And the odd thing that I learned was that most of the businesses that we were suing were in trouble, not because they were intentionally trying to take advantage of people, but because they simply didn't understand the law and didn't realize that what they were doing was wrong. So when I got out, my focus really became business litigation. And I wasn't doing it on a contingent basis at that time, but I found that more and more people were coming in the door who had real claims but couldn't afford the firms that I was working with. So eventually I went on my own so I could take those claims. At first I met David Rasnick because I was picking up real estate deals in the process, and he does real estate. Then we added Peter Meyerson, and he does sophisticated corporate work. More recently, we've brought in John Plout, who helps with the litigation, because the litigation part of our practice has really started to boom.
Well, that's really the engine behind the firm, correct?
Well, at this point, it seems to be the biggest driving force.
And what kinds of cases industries do you like to focus on, Bob?
Well, it's pretty much across the board. We've handled cases of disputes between partners. Very often it's the partner who gets thrown out and he says, hey, I was a partner in this company and now they're firing me. So we've had disputes like that where we had to get them back their partnership interest. Cases between stockholders and stockholders. Between corporations and corporations. There are malpractice cases, accounting malpractice, legal malpractice, any kind of business dispute. We've even had some cases involving malpractices involving divorces. Some of the most interesting cases that we've had involved disputes between partners who started companies, and then one of the partners decided he owned the company and the other guy didn't. And that's resulted in some pretty unusual conclusions, because sometimes it ends up with a settlement where the partner will say, okay, well, I'm going to give you a percentage of the corporation, and then we're settled. Well, I'm on a contingent basis, so now I'm owning a percentage of a company, and sometimes that's worked out very well. And so the company will go public or get sold, and then my stock will be worth a lot more. And sometimes those companies have tanked, and I've ended up with nothing. So the results from that can be really interesting.
You know, sorry to personally interject. I was once fortunate enough that you used me as an expert witness, and you're both attorneys. It was one of the most exciting things I had worked on in a long time, and I found studying the case to be very interesting, because that particular shareholder was let go just around Christmas time, right? Around bonus time.
That's right.
And, studying it and seeing that was, just a way of getting the bonuses. And you could see that he really didn't know how to defend himself. He really didn't understand. And he had a predatory shareholder. I'm not mentioning any names. Mm-hmm. And I felt really good about getting involved in helping you with that case. And I loved being a witness.
And I have to say, you made a great witness. The jury loved you.
One woman in particular.
And that case actually ended up going to the SJC, our highest court, and it made new law on disputes between terminated employees and employers. It's always fun when I can make some new law that helps people.
So are there any areas of the law that you don't focus on? Do you focus on IP litigation at all, or...?
I've had two IP cases, one where a law firm blew some deadlines and lost the client his patents, and that was interesting because the patents never became a product, and so we had to prove what the damages were for a patent that never became a product that was never sold. So that created some interesting challenges, and we've had some other IP cases where some attorneys blew claims for patent infringement, and we had to sue the attorneys for that. It's they're complicated cases because they're a case within a case. You have to prove not only that the attorney was negligent, but you have to prove that if they weren't negligent, they would have won the case. So you got to prove two cases at the same time. It gets complicated.
And with your background in the AG's office, do you do any consumer-related litigation or class action work?
Well, I used to do class action work at one time, but I found that it just got too cumbersome to handle. Our firm really is not equipped for that.
Is that a lot of depositions?
There's always a lot of depositions in any case, but we have to stay small to do what we do. Because we don't have money coming in on a regular basis, it's like my wife says, I only get paid twice a year. So you've got to try and keep your overhead very low so you can we operate like a camel. You know, we've got to go long distances without money before we get money. So we're small. We don't have expensive offices. And that's the way we like it. We call it a lifestyle practice. But, you know,
yes,
you mentioned, I've got to tell you, the worst disputes I've ever been involved with are family disputes.
Right.
They are, because as much as they may have a legitimate case, sometimes you can't get them to act reasonably because they're so enraged by what's happened, you know, a brother against a sister, a child against a father. I've been involved in those cases, and they're horrible cases to handle.
Oh, and they're scars for life.
And they're scars for life. And no matter what you do, no matter how much money you get somebody in the case, it doesn't heal the wounds.
Well, being someone who does a lot of work in family businesses, money is not the solution to the scars. And so when I'm looking at those things, the emotional repair is really the most concerning part of my work with that. But also there has to be some financial component. But this interview is not about me. Bob, if somebody...
No, but to be fair, to be honest with you, when I have those kind of cases, you're the first person I think of sending them to see if we can resolve it without litigation.
Yeah. Thank you. But it's hard. It's hard. You know, I do find myself immersed sometimes in family crisis, family tragedy, and it's a sad place to be. But, you know, you got to feel the pain to want to solve the problem. So if somebody's looking for you, Bob, because you are unique, how would they find you?
Well, as long as they spell my name right, they can Google me. It's C-O-H-A-N. But we have a website. It's crmllp.com. All callers are welcome.
And one more thing for those who don't know, because you see what you see in front of you is a pinstripe suit and a tie. You're also in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, aren't you?
No, that's not fair. we're not in the rock. But when I was in high school, we had a rock and roll band, The Rising Storm. We cut a record. We made 500 copies. It became a collector's item among garage band collectors. It's being reissued in December on vinyl, and there's a documentary about the record that's coming out, we think, in the spring.
And what instrument are we going to see you playing?
You'll see me playing guitar.
Nice.
It still plays. Your band is active still, correct?
Our band is active. A few years ago, we were in a, where was it? It was in Holland. There was a three-day 60s revival festival, and we opened up for the Yardbirds, who people my age will remember, and younger people will remember as Eric Clapton's first band.
So. Well, you notice my staff, when you were talking litigation, they had their eyes to their computers, but as soon as we said the band, they all looked up. So.
Well, I hope you all buy the reissue of our vinyl copy and come to see the documentary. That's Rising Storm. That's rising-storm.com.
Well, I'll tell you,
look that up.
My wife, who's a few years younger than Bob, grew up in Worcester like Bob. Before Bob was an attorney, he was a legend in Worcester. So that's what my wife told me when she went, "You met Bob Cohn?"
Tell everybody. Thank you.
Bob, thanks for being on the show today.
Good
always
to
a pleasure
here.
To see you.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to thank Pat and Davis' mom for hosting us. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages on the one and only Radio Entrepreneurs.